coming up in 1 minute on the Jacking Around podcast.
Like, did you always sound like you smoked four packs of cigarettes and had whiskey?
When I first started, I sounded like high squeaky Alvin and the Chipmunks. I felt like
what I've always loved about hanging out with you, especially late at night, is
Paul.
Can we talk about Paul for a minute?
You really want? Was that us bring that up?
That's why you're here.
Paul's my
your alter ego.
Best thing about a major label, there's no ceiling. You look up and there's nothing holding you back.
Did your fans from Texas ever be like, what, now you want to come back to us?
The only thing that they saw was Saturday Night get to number 39 on the charts.
So you never did like a Lips of an Angel thing? Or we really went for some fucking titties and brass.
I never did, but I wasn't offered the chance either. I probably would have.
Given the chance, I'd sell out.
Is Taylor Swift a generational?
Yes. Because it might not be because she's Ray Charles. It's not because she's Stevie Wonder.
Because of who she is.
It's because she's Garth Brooks.
She plays the game.
She is the game.
Yeah.
And she figured out what
she wasn't at one point.
No, from the minute I met her, dude, she knew exactly who she was going to be. And if she didn't make it, she was going to fail spectacularly. I remember getting demos from Stapleton. I'm sure you got them too. And you wrote with them where you're just like, I don't know how this is going to work, but if this doesn't work, then I need to be out of the business.
Stories bring lessons, laughter, unforgettable experiences, and memories that far outlive the storytellers themselves. Great stories happen to those who can tell them. This is the Jacking Around podcast, hosted by two-time Academy of Country Music Award winner and master storyteller Jack Ingram. In these open dialogue podcasts, Jack digs into the personal stories of a wide variety of special guests, including your favorite music, sports, and entertainment personalities. And now to introduce today's guest, here is podcast producer Matt Beaveteau.
Thank you, Mr. Rowdy Yates, for that intro. Welcome to the highlights of the first episode of the Jacking Around podcast with special guest Wade Bowen. Note, if you would like to listen or watch the full podcast, I've provided links in the description below. So a little bit about Wade. Wade grew up in Waco, went to school at Texas Tech, where he began his music career. He released his first record in 2002. Fast forward 20 years later, Wade has released nearly a dozen records, been hugely successful, touring not only here in Texas, but throughout the country. Before we begin, some quick housekeeping notes. The Jacking Around podcast is available in both audio across all major audio platforms and in video on YouTube. Also, don't forget to connect on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Last but not least, do us a huge favor and subscribe for you audio listeners. Please rate this podcast. All links are provided in the description and at jackingaroundpodcast.com. Also provided in the description is Wade and Jack's bios. Here are the highlights of the first episode. Enjoy.
We good?
We good.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Jacking Around. I'm Jack Ingram. This is my podcast where I have a few drinks, swap a few stories, maybe play a few songs and just talk about whatever with my friends, my buddies. So figured we get Wade down here to talk about life in the COVID season, the season of Corona. Wade, welcome to the show, man.
When I was a freshman at Tech, all I knew was mainstream country. And I went to see Robert Earl. He had just released Number 2 Live Dinner around that time. My dad had given me the original live album
from Sons of Herman.
And then I went to watch them play in Lubbock. And I went, oh.
There's this whole other thing.
Yeah. It clicked because it also at that point, I thought I was going to have to move to Nashville, wait tables.
Am I interrupting you?
You're fine.
Matt Peavito, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, but I thought, you know, I had to move to Nashville and wait tables and wait my turn for the age old story you always heard over and over. And then I saw him and I was like, wait, I mean, I can do this now.
Did the mainstream stuff start to kind of fade as you realized, oh, there's this thing called this, like, you can be an artist, but you can also be mainly a songwriter. That's what I'm going to be. Like, you know, it's no accident yeah. that you and I became friends.
Right.
Or that you and Randy became friends. Cause like there's an element to the whole thing where it's like, I wanted to be Waylon or Willie or Waylon, like where you write your songs and you make them famous or make them impactful.
I don't know that I ever thought of it that way. I don't know if I ever thought about that's, I just knew that I wanted to write and go make records and figure it out. I don't know.
Were you into singers? Like, were you into B.J. Thomas or B.W. Stevenson or?
I've always been into singer. I mean, that's why I love Vince Gill. I mean, I love singers. I love voices. I love Don Henley. I love Creedence. You know, that was kind of some other stuff growing up that started, the more that I started playing, those are the people that I wanted to sing. The Eagles, you know, I wanted to sing that stuff was what I wanted to cover. It wasn't the mainstream country of the late 90s and early 2000s. I couldn't even tell you.
So you dropped it.
I dove into the songwriters.
Did you know it was like a bad habit, or did you drop it just in favor of other things? Like it's hot. You had to, like, did you always sound like you smoked four packs of cigarettes and had whiskey?
When I first started, I sounded like high squeaky Alvin and the Chipmunks. I felt like it took me a long time to settle into my voice.
Did you sing in high school, sing in a choir, or sing in the?
I did a little bit, but I was always kind of embarrassed or shy about it. I didn't learn to play guitar till I was 17.
Yeah.
That's when I started writing. And the only reason I learned to play guitar was so I could write. And then I started writing. And then, so I learned guitar at 17 and I started a band when I was 19.
Was it just West 84 or was it Wade Bowen and West 84?
It was just West 84 at first.
And then you terrible realized night. Quickly that you were the one writing the songs and making the calls and driving the van?
Well, when we first started, it was the age old thing. Meet some buddies, jam in your garage for a little while, and go jump up on an open mic night, and all of a sudden we had a gig.
So you're in a band called West. Hold on, you're West 84 is a band. We're gonna share everything, even chicks, maybe.
Oh yeah, we get paid. sorry, honey, but we get paid every night, and there was five of us, and I would one.
Did you two, pay yourself three, twice or four, was it
five? No, I was honest. I slid it up five ways, and there you go. That's our deal.
But you were booking the gigs.
Yep.
You were writing the songs. Did you buy the PA?
Yeah.
Did you have the van?
Well, we didn't have a van for a little
whatever.
Time.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were providing transportation.
Yeah, of course.
See, I would have argued.
Yeah.
Which I did with my first band.
I never claimed to be smart.
It's like, here's how we're going to do this.
Yeah.
I never did it this way.
You should have done it this way.
I get paid twice. I'm two members of the band. I'm the singer in the band, but I'm also the songwriter, the guy who's booking the gigs and everything else. So I'm going to pay that both of those people. And then everybody's going to get it.
Yeah. That's what I should have done, but I didn't.
Let's go back and get some retro. Let's get retro action. Once Pat had some success out of Nashville, Ragweed to a certain extent, I did to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. Friends of yours started to go, I'm going to try and tackle this other thing. And it means taking the risk of all the risks that is of being called a sellout or whatever, or not making the entire jump like you thought you could. And then can you still go back and have an audience? Like all the things that are taken into account when you go try and reach for the brass ring, so to speak.
Right.
You did that.
I did that. Yeah. I went for it. I had all the dream,
was it burning? What made you do that when you were doing pretty damn well? Was it just because you saw your friends?
And like, it had nothing to do with what my friends were doing. I'd always wanted that. Everybody thinks it's like a cuss word or something, but
it's not.
It's not. And there's so many great things. The best thing about a major label in those situations is there's no ceiling. You look up and there's nothing holding you back.
Right. Well, you were on, what label were you on?
I was on B&A Columbia. Now it's Columbia Nashville.
Oh, sorry, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
So was that the disconnect? Did they not really know what your aspirations were? Did they not take you seriously as a commercial artist? Because I know for a fact, at any given moment on a label like that, Columbia, Sony, whatever, there's going to be artists that don't even know what we're talking about when it comes to Guy Clark or B.W. Stevenson or Steve Earle, or they're just looking at us like, what? You either make it or you don't.
Right.
Like, who gives a shit what song you're singing? Why do you give a fuck what Jack Ingram thinks about you?
Right.
As long as Tim McGraw knows your name and all the radio stations do, you're good. So there are those kinds of artists, which that's why they're so successful, because they don't know there's this other world you can.
It's dark underworld.
You can live in.
Yeah. You probably dealt with this, but a big thing that the hardest part of me being on the label was, how do we make this Texas guy work to the rest of the country and the rest of the world? And I'd be like, well, nobody else, none of these other stations know what I do in Texas. You know, like if you're going to stereotype me there, then, it was like, well, how do we make it Texas music to the world? It's like, no, have you not listened to my music?
That's always been a trip.
But my music is not Texas music. It's music from Texas. That's what I've always pride myself on. So stop saying that. Stop throwing that out there for them to enter their brains, because you're just setting me up to fail, because they're not going to play a kid from Texas music.
Right.
But they can play a kid from Texas. I sat over there for a year with nothing. And so I said, you know, do we have any other plans to release any other songs? Or I'm not waiting tables down the road. I've got a career.
Like, I have a career.
I need to go do, you know.
Or get off the pot.
Yeah. And they said, well, let's go cut some more songs. And I was like,
That old game?
Yeah, I'm out. I'm not going to do that again.
So I walked.
And they let me out.
Yeah.
Thank God. They could have left me there miserably unhappy. And Gary wasn't happy with it, man. But he did. He did it because he liked me, and we get along still to this day. And
did your fans from Texas ever be like, what, now you want to come back to us?
No, because the only thing that they saw was Saturday Night get to number 39 on the charts.
So they saw nothing. So in hindsight, you think that's lucky?
Kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's...
So you never did like a Lips of an Angel thing? Or Well, you really went for some fucking titties and brass.
I never did, but I wasn't offered the chance either. I probably would have. So...
Given the chance, I'd sell out.
Because Randy was on CA for 10 years, and you know, they never had a hit go above 38. And someone said, don't you think that's probably the best thing that ever happened to your career? Because if he'd have gone number five,
you either go all the way or you don't go.
He would have had a lot of those people go sell out, you know.
Well, that's why I did the Lips of an Angel thing, because I was like, you don't have the joy of hindsight.
Right.
All I know is that, hey man, one of the things that they do in these other worlds is you take a badass rock song,
yeah,
you Gary Allen it up. And I remember thinking, like, you either go big or go home. Like, it either works or you go figure it out after that. But if you have the chance, you do it. So when did you get off that label and when went to make the record with Gaddis?
February or March when I decided, can y'all please let me go? And Gary let me go. It was like, cool, you have your release, you're good. And I immediately started planning the next record because I wanted to, I let that fuel the fire of like, I'm going to prove to them that they made a mistake. They messed this up and I want to show them. That was another thing of being out of the label and the freedom to do whatever we want. That's where the whole My Beer thing came from. Was Randy had just gotten out of the label too there. So it was a perfect time for us both to just kind of middle finger it and see what happens. And I think there's a lot of people, especially in the music business, it happens easily, happens fast. There's people that do the work and there's people that don't do the work. And there's no rhyme or reason why one works and the other doesn't. That's the hardest part. And also the coolest part about music, the wild card,
the Elvis,
the why did that happen aspect of careers that I've come to accept that some people just take off, and it has nothing to do with talent, has nothing to do with any other reason that for some reason they convince people to believe them, what they're saying, more than they do me.
From my perspective, I was always conflicted of like, how do I reconcile needing to keep my integrity, needing to keep my just whatever that staunch Texas thing is, like, I want to be a star. I want to make all that happen so I can be better artist and then be a star and be better artist, because that's what I felt like Willie did. So I was always having these, I know that's a hit.
But I can't cut that.
But I ain't going to cut that.
Right.
And the label's going, dude, why not? I'm like, I don't know. And then 4 years later, I hear back the same song and I'm like, I could have cut that. My brain was just somewhere else. So I think there's that. But then also I think that it's not happenstance. Like, you and I both, well, we both knew Miranda when she was 15, or she was coming to shows, and I saw her grow up, and the minute I saw her, I go, there's something different about, like, first time I met her, she was the first act on a 12-act bill in Nacogdoches. And then I was on the same label with Taylor Swift, and I go, oh, that's a different deal.
Is Taylor Swift a generational?
Yes. But it might not be because she's Ray Charles.
Right.
It's not because she's Stevie Wonder.
Because of who she is.
It's because she's Garth Brooks.
She plays the game. Plays ball.
She is the game. Yeah. And she figured out what it was.
She wasn't at one point.
No, from the minute I met her, dude, she knew exactly who she was going to be. And if she didn't make it, she was going to fail spectacularly. And I think Stapleton was all, like, I remember getting demos from Stapleton. I'm sure you got them too. And you wrote with them where you're just like, I don't know how this is going to work, but if this doesn't work, then I need to be out of the business. There was an argument going on social media about somebody made the equivalent comparison to, I'm glad I had my time in Texas because it was like being in the minor leagues.
Oh, yeah. Granger.
And you got pissed.
I did. I posted it and caught a lot of shit for it.
How do you feel about that now?
So I feel bad for saying it because that's not my style at all to call somebody out. All I said was, cheers to the minors, which I believe in this. I believe in Texas music going back to Willie and Waylon in the 70s and what the fact that we're the only scene that's lasted 50 years and we can never leave
longer
the state.
Than
and
that, man.
We can never leave the state and make a living. That's what we all say. That's what everybody says about us from the outside looking in. He's one of my favorite people now. Like because of that disagreement that we had, I really respect him and I respect what he's doing now. And I just really felt like it was a little bit of a knock. And that's why I got upset with it.
What I've always loved about hanging out with you, especially late at night, is
Paul.
Can we talk about Paul for a minute?
You really want to? Was that us bring that up?
That's why you're here.
Yeah. Paul's my...
Your alter ego. Your guy who's like, yeah. does he get to say mean shit that you just can't bring yourself to say?
People either love Paul.
I love him.
Or they hate him.
And hate him.
Yeah.
But when he comes out, do you feel him? Like, I know I'm making this into something more real than it is. Is it a conscious decision to go, you know what, man?
No, it's not.
I'm going to let this happen because I'm tired of shit.
No. I mean, it kind of depends on the funk that I'm in.
But it doesn't seem like it's an inebriation thing. It does. I mean, maybe I know
probably
that.
Probably is, yeah.
I know that it happens oftentimes when you're drinking or doing whatever you're doing. But it doesn't feel like. Paul ain't sloppy.
No, he's not slurring his words or any of that. But I will say this. I have a brain that like never turns off.
Right.
Turn the business off. I can't ever turn the whatever. It just never turns. So when I get to a point in the night when I can actually do that, I think is where Paul comes out.
Paul feels real to me for some reason.
But he feels real to a lot of people.
Is Paul the guy that gets pissed off when we're supposed to be somewhere at 5 and I show up at 5:15 and you're like,
sometimes.
Fuck you, Ingram. How come
Paul's the guy that like when I like I will kind of take it and take it and take it and just and then I'll take it a lot longer than most. Like I'll get pushed and then all of a sudden erupt.
But Paul sometimes is the guy like that's the guy who's underneath there going, how come so and so gets to act like a prick and everybody still loves? In fact, he's selling more tickets than me. How come so and so gets to be a drunk? How come so and so gets to be an asshole? And Paul's going, fuck those guys. Because
of course
I could act that way, but I don't because it's not right.
Of course.
Okay. We all have that.
My mentality has never been about how successful can I be. My mentality has always been do the work and everything else will take care of itself. That's the reason I jumped straight back into more records when the label thing fell apart. That's the reason I've always pushed myself because I just keep myself busy by working my ass off. And I feel like everything else will take care of itself.
Okay, let me ask you this.
My dad has always said, you take care of the small money and the big money.
Take care of the pennies, the dollars, take care of it.
Right?
It's true.
So that's what I've always done. That's my mentality.
Peyton Manning, Deion Sanders. Who you choose?
Peyton Manning. Every day. Every chance. Every time.
Orange Fanta or Big Red?
Or Big Red.
Big Red.
Those aren't opposites.
They're not opposites, but they're very different.
Okay.
Orange Crush or Big Red? Okay. You're going with Big Red still?
I'm going Big Red.
This is easy because you're from Texas, but McDonald's or Whataburger?
Whataburger.
George Strait or Garth Brooks?
George Strait.
Of course. And here's, another- here's one. Hold up. 1970s, early 80s. Dallas Cowboys, Houston Oilers.
Cowboys.
So see, there's Paul.
But
Paul is the Dallas Cowboys.
Okay, but let's say this.
Wade is the Houston Oilers.
I really want one more rung of the ladder up.
Is that a Grammy? Is it a hit?
Is it I don't a, know. I don't know what that is.
Songwriting credit? What is it?
I don't know what that is. I don't know. I
NPR? Like, what is it? We all want NPR, Paul. Just fucking deal with it.
I want something to kind of boost it a little bit. I just want something. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that is. I don't even know how to reach that anymore with all that's happened over the last 8 to 10 years of my career. I'm not sure that I know how to make that happen or what to do, but I feel like there's one more thing and I feel like I'm going to eventually figure that out, whatever that may be.
When I say, hey, Wade, how do you want to get there?
Okay, let me ask you, I'll turn around on you. How do you control that? 10 years from now, how do you get there? It takes surrounding yourself with a team that can do that. It takes all of that shit that you just mentioned earlier, that killing yourself practically when you're not 30 anymore, killing yourself to go fly to the stations and do all the monkey
dance
and all that.
Yeah, that's not going to happen anymore.
None of that. That's what it requires at this juncture. As a youngster, you think you can control everything. You think you can control whether you're going to have crowds and control whether you're going to have hits and you're going to control whether you're going to. And as you get older, you realize it's not. So what becomes important to me? The song and the live show. And I guess when I say I think there's one more thing that happens, I guess I put that back on me saying I got to write that song or I got to write that record. That just that's really what it is. I mean, we can talk about all the labels and all the BS,
but
whatever
none of that
we
matters
want
at this point.
But the songs is what really comes down to.
I would imagine that I probably told you about myself a lot more than I asked about you before we got to be friends. And then it's like, but then all of a sudden we have a connection that you kind of facilitated by just not really always needing to be the first guy with the strongest light on, which is also the things that you and I have talked about lately. Not where I'm like, dude, nobody hates you.
Yeah, there's a, and it doesn't come from lack of confidence. It comes from like needing to kind of back off from that mentality. Hey, man, this is your time. Take it, own it. You know, but I'm always don't want to take it from someone else. You know, and it's something I struggle with for sure because it's really not the mentality of this business.
It's funny, man. You grew up with sisters.
Yeah.
And a really strong mother.
Yep.
Because you treat yourself sometimes the way I think of
being spoiled?
No. To where you put yourself
last.
Last.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah. No, I've gotten myself in a lot of trouble because of that. I mean, I always put everybody else first to a fault. My mom really has always said a person's best quality is always their worst.
Sometimes do you look back and go, God, if I'd have just never gone and seen Robert O'Keefe, I could have moved to Nashville and fucking made it.
Been a big star.